Hi, and welcome to this edition of Side Retired, the MLB podcast. It's Dylan joined alongside James as we are here sort of for an instant slash emergency reaction podcast. Haven't done one of these in a while, but as the resident Met fan here, we figured Noah Syndergaard signing was worth it. Noah Syndergaard has indeed signed a one-year contract with the Los Angeles Angels, 1 year worth $21 million pending physical, which he took today, and it seems like he'll be passing that. He has declined the Mets' $18.4 million qualifying offer, so after telling everybody in New York it would be disaster, I think his phrasing was like he'd be pretty shocked if he wasn't a Met next year. Turns out $2.6 million was enough to make him not a Met next year. So, James, how are you feeling?
I think it's an interesting move by the Angels to not get a guy who's been more proven over the last 2 years, like a Marcus Stroman or Robbie Ray, who can eat up innings for that horrible Angels pitching staff. I mean, yeah, in theory, Noah Syndergaard, you know, you think of him, you're like, oh, wow, yeah, he's worth that money. But then you look and you realize he's pitched two games in the last two MLB seasons. Like, sorry, not two games, two innings in the last two seasons. And, I mean, I just think it's an interesting move by the Angels. And I think if you're a Mets fan, you should definitely be a little bit happy that you didn't have to spend all that money on a guy who's unproven. And you get the compensation pick. So that's a great day for a Mets fan, honestly, I think.
Well, I think as a Met fan, I sort of went through the five stages of grief and ended up in anger. When I initially started, it was, wow, Noah Syndergaard's gone. He was one of three, technically four, if you include Juris Familia, members of the 2015 Mets that were still around. And it appears based on how this offseason is going that Conforto is going to leave, Noah's going to leave, and Familia is going to leave, leaving Jacob deGrom as the only member of the 2015 Mets. And Syndergaard leaving also means the end of the Fab Five pitchers. Harvey's gone, Matz is gone, Wheeler's gone, now Noah's gone, leaving Jake all alone. So I guess if you're a Mets fan, you're happy that you've got the best of both of those bunches. But at the same time, you're thinking, isn't Steve Cohen supposed to be spending all the money in the world? And isn't the Mets really passed on him because he got $21 million and they offered $18? Is $3 million really the difference? And is this going to be Zach Wheeler all over again in that we let him go? At least this time it's not to the Phillies where we have to face him five times a year, whereas here the Angels will see him once every 3 years. Coincidentally, 2022, the Mets play the AL West, so we will be seeing Noah Syndergaard at some point this season. But then there was a rumor that began to circulate that Noah Syndergaard apparently accepted the Mets offer, or accepted the Angels offer without even telling the Mets, and that Sandy Alderson, according to Craig Carton and Evan Roberts, was not aware that Noah Syndergaard was going to accept the Angels offer and that the Mets offer wasn't the highest one until Syndergaard was already on his way to LA to take a physical. And he said, sorry, deal's done. I'm an Angel. And if that's truly the case, you can't blame the Mets on this one. And I know that's hard to believe because the Mets, believe me, do not have the track record where you can say, oh, you can't blame the Mets on this one. But if it's true that Noah Syndergaard left without telling anybody, that's not on the Mets. And as you just said, there are plenty of starting pitching options out there. Stroman, Robbie Ray, Kevin Gausman. I don't think Max Scherzer is going to come to New York. I doubt Zach Greinke's coming to New York. And Justin Verlander is a really interesting target. Plus, there's a lot of trade options too. So if Noah Syndergaard is not coming back, that's $18 million that you thought were going to be on the books. Now they're not. So what are you going to do about it? Sort of mentality. Steve Cohen cannot just now say, oh, we're good with DeGrom, Taijuan Walker, Tyler McGill, David Peterson, and whoever we get as like a fifth starter. Maybe Carlos Carrasco comes back from injury. You need to get a guy that can be your two. I know you have Justin Verlander in mind if you want to elaborate on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Noah Syndergaard in theory is a lot better than Noah Syndergaard in reality. You know, now at this stage, coming off Tommy John surgery for two years. So I think really if you want to put your money somewhere where it's really, I think, more worth it, I would definitely go after Justin Verlander from the New York Mets. I mean, he has the track record. You know, he's shown that he's still a great pitcher up until he got surgery this past season. But, I mean, he threw that bullpen about a week ago. And, you know, teams were saying he was back up to 97, 98 with good stuff, with sharp bite on his off-speed pitches. So, I think really, if you want to risk $20 million, Justin Verlander's the man and where you need to put your money if you're the New York Mets.
I think the only holdup with Verlander is that he does have the qualifying offer attached to him. So you would be giving up, and in the Mets case, it's the 14th overall pick for one, maybe 2 years of Verlander. So is the difference between that versus re-signing a guy like Stroman, who he was a Met last year, so he doesn't have the pick, and a guy like Kevin Gausman, who was not offered a qualifying offer. Does that mean you take those guys as well as the 14th overall pick, as well as the pick you now got for Syndergaard, as well as the pick you're probably going to get from Michael Conforto? Do you like take the stockpile of draft picks and tell Tommy Tanis, who has had a really good record of draft picks besides Kumar Rocker last year, say, go to town, get us 4 to 5 legitimate good players for the future?
Yeah, but wouldn't you only lose one pick for signing Verlander?
You would lose the 14th overall pick in this year's draft.
Yeah, exactly. You get back the pick for Syndergaard, and you get back a pick for Conforto. So I think that it's very much worth it just to lose one when you're still gaining two back. So I see no reason why the Mets should hold up on signing Verlander.
Plus, the Mets GM search that ranged from Theo Epstein to Brian Cashman to a used car salesman to anybody to a lawyer who's been out of baseball for 5 years. They finally settled on Billy Epler, who, if you don't know, used to work for the Yankees under Brian Cashman, sparking those rumors already about Cashman's going to be the Mets president in a year. He's also best friends with David Stern, so that sparked that rumor of crazy Mets fans are already thinking ahead to 2023. But more importantly, he was recently the general manager of the Angels. And the Angels, they're not very successful recently, but you have to give them credit. They go all in. They push their chips to the center of the table, and they give Justin Upton a big contract and Anthony Rendon a big contract. And they spend on pitchers just not right. They spent on Trevor Cahill and Matt Harvey. Both of them got $15 million roughly. So the Angels go all in with Billy Epler at the helm. So maybe the Mets can do the same. I think in general, the Mets core that we have right now is probably better than the core that the Angels had built. The Angels were pretty much just Mike Trout, and that was it. The Mets, I think, have a better core and to have a solid Jacob DeGrom at the top of your rotation.
I agree. I mean, the new GM for the Mets obviously has a track record of being able to sign big free agents and get big deals done. So I guess hopefully this time you just hope that he signs good guys instead of bad players like he did with the Angels. But obviously the track record of being able to get big deals done is very important, because Steve Cohen has said that he's willing to go way over the luxury tax limit. If the Mets were to go over the limit, he said they were going to go way over. So that should give any GM a great deal of confidence to go work in free agency this offseason.
And well, if you are the Mets, you probably need at least a starter or two this offseason, and that's probably going to be costly, as we saw with Syndergaard's 1 year, $21 million. In theory, you could also say a pitcher like Andrew Heaney got $8 million, so it seems like starters are making money. The other starter that has already signed is Eduardo Rodriguez, went to the Detroit Tigers, 5 years, $77 million. Erod got paid. I know Red Sox fans are very meh about him. They sort of say, yes, he's a solid starter, but one of the most infuriating people because he can blow up at any given point. I think more than just Erod, this shows that the Tigers are going to be legit this offseason. Carlos Correa is probably not out of play for them, maybe a Verlander reunion. What do you think about the Tigers' hot start to the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I've always seen people say that Rodriguez is a much better starter than his ERA and his all his, you know, not less analytical statistics show. But I mean, like, what else are we looking at? Like, the dude has a over 4 ERA every year. Like, what made him worthy of this giant deal that the Tigers gave him? I just think the Tigers wanted to send a message that, hey, we're here to play. Like, this offseason, we're coming next year. But this was just not the right move for the Tigers at all. I don't see why signing a pitcher to a long-term deal, especially a pitcher of Eduardo Rodriguez's caliber, like, what's that going to do for them? Like, if the deal blows up, which I think it will massively, you're set back another 3 or 4 years, and the Tigers don't have the cap ability to, like, just pay that off or just, like, get over it and keep going with this rebuild. It just doesn't make sense with the path the Tigers were on.
And I think
with the rebuild they were constructing,
this can't be the only move for the Tigers. Because I think if technically the Tigers bring in another starter and a couple of bats, you can say, oh, they're trying to win the AL Central, which we mentioned last episode. Nobody should be scared by the White Sox. If you put in a solid offseason, like we mentioned, the Tigers and the Royals, and if the Indians get a couple of bats, you can compete with the White Sox next year. So maybe the Tigers figure, let's go all in. They set the market for starting pitchers as opposed to letting the market get dictated and then they have to go find whoever's left over. They must see something in Eduardo Rodriguez. And I'm pretty sure there's something about like how the Red Sox assistant pitching coach back when Erod was first coming up is now the Tigers pitching coach. So maybe he feels like there's something there. But the Tigers, their rotation right now is Erod, Casey Mize, Matthew Boyd, Tarik Skubal, and Matt Manning, which is okay, but is definitely
they're young,
lacking.
There's room for growth in that rotation. So maybe they just wanted a veteran presence to kind of deal with the young starting pitchers. But I don't know. It just seems like a really big deal for Eduardo Rodriguez.
But I mean, congrats to him for
how to get maybe. Maybe they just watched ALCS game four, and that's what they based their deal off of.
And if you put him on the same contract as Correa, who knows what happens there? Another deal that happened today was Jose Barrios signed a big extension with the Toronto Blue Jays. What are your thoughts on that extension?
I think it's a great deal for the Blue Jays. I mean, low annual pay. And I mean, I think it's a great deal for a starting pitcher who has a lot more potential. I believe he pitched well for them after the trade deadline, and I mean the Blue Jays needed to lock up a starter for a long time, and I think they got their guy.
Yeah, and I think with the Blue Jays, they are a team that could compete again next year. Hyunjin Ryu is obviously still in their rotation. Manoah, Stripling, and Nate Pearson, they could use an additional piece or two. I don't think people are going to doubt the Yankees are probably better, the Red Sox are probably better, but the Blue Jays are on the up and coming. Speaking of the Yankees, there was a rumor circulating today that the Yankees were about to acquire Matt Olson in exchange for Luke Voit and Oswaldo Peraza. And I think there was another prospect in there, Austin Wells. Obviously, it didn't happen because Matt Olson is still a member of the Oakland A's. But do you see that potentially being a fit long-term and potentially happening at some point this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees have a first baseman problem. They had it all last year until they got Rizzo. And I mean, really, Rizzo didn't fill in and do all that much. I mean, he was a nice veteran presence, but I mean, he really didn't provide that much offense for the Yankees. So yeah, I think Matt Olson solves the first base problem. He plays great defense, and he's a great left-handed power bat who can also hit for a decent average. So I think that fills a big hole for the Yankees at first base.
All right, so now let's get into the segment that we've started to do the last couple of episodes, a sign and a trade, where we're going to predict one free agent signing that's going to happen and one trade that will happen. And since we mentioned the Matt Olson fake trade, we're going to go into two separate Oakland A's fake trades that we could see happening. James, I'll let you go first with your fake trade.
Yeah, I think the A's end up trading Matt Chapman, probably to the Phillies, who really are looking for a third baseman. And the Phillies could end up signing him long-term, unlike the A's, because the A's are a poverty franchise.
I will go with Chris Bassett, who's another member of the Oakland A's. He's had a breakout season. I think he could go across the bay and go to the San Francisco Giants, who obviously had a great rotation last year with Webb, Kevin Gausman, Alex Wood, a bunch of other pieces, Johnny Cueto. They're all gone now. Logan Webb is literally the only holdover. The rotation that currently is projected for Logan Webb, Sammy Long, Kervin Castro, Caleb Barger, and Tyler Beede. Do I expect that to be their rotation? No. And in all likelihood, will they re-sign one of the guys that stood out for them last year? Probably. Maybe it's a Tony Disco. Maybe it's a Johnny Cueto or someone like that. But could Chris Bassett be a low-risk, high-reward type of person for the Giants to pick up? Absolutely. And the Giants, as we know, have a high payroll, and they can probably pick up Chris Bassett, where the A's are probably looking to deal him, Sean Manaea, Frankie Montas, and as you mentioned, Matt Chapman and Matt Olson. Do you have a free agency prediction? I know next episode we'll get into all our free agency predictions, but one little sneak peek.
Yeah, I think now that we see Syndergaard go, I would basically lock it in that Marcus Stroman is a Met next year. I don't see how Stevie Cohen lets him walk away, especially with how great of a season he had last year for the Mets.
I would agree with that because it would be very disappointing for Marcus Stroman to end up elsewhere. I initially had him going to the Yankees in my free agency predictions, which I will literally, I could write that as a incorrect prediction right now, even without him getting named the signing with another team, because if you've seen, he went on another Twitter rant about the Yankees today about how he'd never go there and making fun of them. So I really hope he stays with the New York Mets. Will it happen? Who knows? But I really hope the Mets get at least a starting pitcher. If not, though, now that there's money off the books, I will continue to dream that Carlos Correa will be coming to New York, not with the Yankees, but instead the Mets will make the team Puerto Rico infield. They will get Carlos Correa and Javier Baez, line them up with Francisco Lindor, potentially make Carlos Beltran your manager, get that whole WBC Puerto Rico team together and potentially go on a run. So I will say Carlos Correa is a member of the New York Mets. You will say Marcus Stroman is a member of the New York Mets. So even though this is, I guess you could look at this as either a sad slash end of an era Mets episode, and that the 2015 World Series is really no longer connected to the Mets other than DeGrom, which I guess if there's going to be a link, that's probably the best link possible between the two teams. So who knows if this is a new era of Met baseball ahead of us in year two of Stevie Cohen. I guess 30 seconds before we wrap up, congrats to Kevin Cash and Gabe Kapler. You're the managers of the year, as well as Jonathan India and Randy Arozarena were named the rookies of the year. If you had to make a prediction, AL MVP, is it going to be Shohei? And then NL MVP, I guess maybe Bryce Harper or Juan Soto or Fernando Tatis Jr.?
I mean, the NL MVP is going to go to Harper. I mean, there's nothing really to argue there. It shouldn't go to Harper, but it will. Austin Riley for MVP. I'm still on that train. the AL MVP, it's going to go to Shohei because we know how baseball works. We know how the Riders work. They get hooked up on him being a pitcher and a hitter, although he had a horrible second half and no one talks about it. I think it should go to Vlad, but it will not go to Vlad. It'll go to Shohei Ohtani.
And then the Cy Youngs will be announced, I guess, when you guys listen to this later today. Robbie Ray versus Garrett Cole, and then the three-headed monster of Max Scherzer, Zach Wheeler, Corbin Burns.
I think Corbin Burns will take it home for the NL, and then Garrett Cole will take it home for the AL.
I'll disagree on both. I'll say Robbie Ray takes it for the AL, and I will go with Max Scherzer because of the name notoriety.
I think Scherzer should win it, but I don't think Scherzer will win it.
And notice Zach Wheeler is a finalist for the Cy Young Award. Please don't let the same thing happen with Noah Syndergaard next year. Please don't let that happen. That would be so disappointing, but also so Mets. One guy that, however, didn't play with the Mets, but did play for the other team we focused on, the Oakland A's, is Coco Crisp. It is indeed Hall of Fame season. So look at that. You're even laughing. That was a brilliant transition to once again remind that Coco Crisp is up for the Hall of Fame. Ballot will be released around Thanksgiving time. So make sure you're pestering all those BBWA writers to vote Coco Crisp into the Hall of Fame.
My bet will remain if Coco Crisp gets the, is it 5 or 10% to stay on the ballot?
5%.
If Coco Crisp gets the 5% to stay on the ballot, I will buy a signed Coco Crisp jersey and hang it up in my dorm.
Now, in all likelihood, he's probably going to get 0 votes. But if there is a single writer that votes for Coco Crisp for the Hall of Fame, you bet we will be spamming the DMs and everything to get that guy on the podcast as a great guest. So we will see what happens there. It's Dylan, it's James. We will be back probably, I think, Friday morning will be the release of our big free agency predictions episode, maybe Saturday the latest, but we will get that out to you. There's a chance you hear a familiar old voice on that episode. I won't go any further because I haven't officially finalized that, but we will probably be hearing more than just James and me on that podcast. So I will leave it at that, but unless there's anything else you want to add.
Buster Posey's not a Hall of Famer. Let me just trigger some people with that one.
Wow. I'll threw that in that at the end. We're angering A's fans, and now we're also going after Giants fans.
If Jorge Posada didn't make it, Buster Posey doesn't have a chance to make it. Let me just say that.
Well, we can save that for when the MLB lockdown, CBA lockdown happens on December 2nd, and we are searching for content, and we will definitely do a Hall of Fame episode as we get closer to that. So unless there's anything else, I think we're all good. So until the next time, the side is retired.